Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm waiting for my guest, Rabbi Alex Karlebach. He'll be here shortly. But in the meantime, I just wanted to say thank you so much. I got many messages asking how I was because of my voice being so hoarse last week. As you can hear, it's back, thank heavens, and I'm fine. So thank you for your concern. Rabbi Karlebach and I are going to be talking about faith in the valley and about compassion and how we learn from others and how we too can teach others. You know, there's the famous story about an old Indian man, and he tells a story that there were two wolves, one good and one bad, living among us, and that they were constantly fighting. And his grandson asked, "Which one will win?" And the old Indian said, "Whichever one we feed will win." Now, this actually explains human behaviors in so many ways, because human behavior is what we learn. As little children, we learn how to care for others. Leo Biscaglia says, "Too often we underestimate the power of a touch, a smile, a kind word, a listening ear, an honest compliment, or the smallest act of caring, all of which have a potential to turn a life around." And Rabbi Karlebach has just walked in. He's going to be turning quite a lot of lives around today. Hi, Rabbi. Were you rushing to get here?
Thank you.
I would like to welcome Rabbi Karlebach. Rabbi Karlebach is the Chabad Rabbi of Lyndhurst. He's also an amazing storyteller. He does many of the funerals in Johannesburg, and he's invited around the world as well. People love his stories. His energy, I might add, is contagious. Absolutely contagious. He's just walked in here now, and even though he himself feels stressed, his energy is good.
Thank you.
Rabbi, welcome. Our heading today is Faith in the Valley. You have just come back from Melbourne.
Yes.
Please tell me a bit about Melbourne and how you found it. Because you yourself are a Canadian, is that right?
I was born in Montreal, so I am a Canadian. I learned in New York. I lived in New York for 10 years. That's probably where my accent is more from.
And we're going to get back to your accent in a minute.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm back with Rabbi Alex Karlebach. If you have any messages for him or for me, please won't you WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. This is 101.9 High FM. Rabbi Karlebach, you were telling me that you were born in Montreal, but then you went to New York to study. Is that right?
Yes, and lived there after we got married for about 2 years. So that's where my accent seems to be mainly from.
Yeah.
And we came here in 1980.
Why did you come here?
We were basically offered a position by Rabbi Bernhardt, Rabbi Lipsker, and Koppel Bacha. I had no idea what South Africa is like at all, so I asked Koppel, "What's life like in South Africa?" And he said, "Johannesburg is absolutely the best Jewish community in the world. It is so good," he told us, "that when Mashiach comes, if he wants the Jews to leave and go to Israel, he'll have to offer them a special deal. Otherwise, they'll never go." And I found that to be exactly on the mark. Oh. Very true, especially when we arrived. We had never encountered such a warm, united, amazing community, and thank God it still is today. Mm. And that's, by the way, what I told them in Melbourne as well. We
to
asked
come
them.
Back.
No, I didn't say that. I just said Johannesburg's the best community in the world. And we asked the Rebbe at the time. He told me, if your wife agrees, look into it. And we never looked back. Mm. That's the. But an additional story to that was that we were at our parents for the summer that year in Montreal, in Saint-Agathe. And our house was robbed by our neighbors.
Good heavens.
African Americans. They stole even our light fixtures, beds, everything. And we came back 2 days later, and they were wearing our clothes in front of us and playing with our daughter's toys.
Good heavens.
We called the Attorney General and the police. They said, there's nothing you could do. It's commercially bought. We spoke to our friends. They said, there's nothing you want to do. They're your neighbors. They could do all kinds of terrible things for you. So we decided anew. We had to get away as far as possible from racial tension. And so we moved to South Africa.
Good heavens, that I've never heard anyone tell that story before, or any story similar to that. I mean, the people who left here was also because of they were worried about racial conflict.
Well, thank God we haven't encountered it. In fact, I think, if you ask me, it's a lot more prevalent in America than in South Africa. Mm. There they have chips on their shoulder, it's gefährlich.
Mm. What sort of chips?
The politicians seem to get some pleasure and votes by riling them up and telling them how, well, let's not go there.
So, okay, we won't go there. But, you know, you are obviously a follower of Rebbe Schneerson and the last Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now, what was his idea of sending his students out as you were studying, when you were studying?
He sent students out. He followed in the footsteps of his father-in-law, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, who came to America in 1940, passed away in 1950. He was sending out emissaries throughout. In fact, before he passed away, he sent an emissary to Morocco. Mm. And I think that follows in the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. Mm. There's a very well-known letter that the Baal Shem Tov wrote to his to his brother-in-law, that he had an ascendancy to Heichel Moshiach, to where Moshiach is in the supernal realm. And he asked him, Amos I kos imar, when is Moshiach coming? And Moshiach answered, L'chshiafutsu mayanosecha chutzo, when your wellsprings, the wellsprings of chassidus and the inner light of Torah and the whole Torah are spread throughout, that's when he will come. Mm. In Russia, it was very difficult to send emissaries, though they did, at risk of their lives. But as the Rebbe pointed out, the world has changed tremendously. And today you're able to reach every Jew in the world. And so he sent out emissaries. I don't know if there is a place in the world that Jews are not living, that there is not a Chabad. Even I think even where Jews are not living, I mean, you have in the Congo, you have in different areas of Africa, you have in Vietnam, you have in places which you would least expect to find a Chabad, and they are there.
They are spreading. There. Someone was telling me, and I think it might have been in Hong Kong or somewhere, that it was but not in any of the main cities, but they were looking for somewhere to eat on the Friday night, and they'd heard that there was a Chabad there. And they were walking down this very narrow little pathway, passageway between buildings, and they thought, can't possibly be here. And sure enough, they got to a door. They saw a mezuzah up there.
Yeah.
And they went in. Beautifully set tables.
Beautiful.
Masses of people. I mean, down this dark little alleyway. Isn't that amazing? Now, you know.
My niece,
yes,
Nechamadina Cantor, she and her husband, Rabbi Cantor, run the whole Chabad of Thailand. And they've been there for, since its inception, basically. And as you say, their Chabad has opened up everywhere. They provide the meals. But we are fortunate because a family who lives in those places, what do they do for education?
Mm.
They basically have homeschooling for their kids on computer from Chabad of India or somewhere.
So what did they do before computers?
What did they do? They struggled. They managed to get kosher food themselves, and never mind to provide it for others. In some of these places, there are no shochtim.
Mm.
There's no ready availability. I know I was in a place called Costco, Peru. Actually, the Rebbetzin there is born in Pretoria.
Oh, yeah.
She's Israeli. They go to the farms to get Cholav Yisrael milk.
Mm.
They have their own bakeries there. And you cannot believe the setup.
Good heavens. We're going to get back to that. I wanted you to tell the story about Nebraska.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm back with Rabbi Alex Karlebach. If you would like to contact us, please do so on 061-895-1019. Right now, you're going to be listening to a very short audio clip by Elie Wiesel on his relationship with the Rebbe, Rebbe Schneerson.
But allergic to noise. And I knew a bringer must be noisy. Had to be noisy. I didn't know it was that noisy. And I came. And I saw the Rebbe, really. I saw the Rebbe at work, and that was enough. I saw him. Then, of course, I listened to his divretere. That was different. But the main thing is sight. I saw the Rebbe. And I realized that all the tzar in the world, all the pain in the world, all the Jewish you saw him in the world, were on his face. And he was singing in order to overcome that sadness. Then I asked for a blinker, and of course, I came and we spent, I thought 10 minutes, then I thought 20 minutes, then I thought maybe a half hour. We spent like 2 or 3 hours. And he said, come back. And came back. As often as possible, as I could. The Rebbe was like the Bhagat. He had vision and wisdom and knowledge and everything else. But in practical life, he was an architect. He knew whom to send where. I think the Shaliach himself didn't know why he was sent somewhere, but he knew. So that is the impact of the Rebbe. I must say that personally I miss him. Profoundly and terribly. I said it to one of your messiahs of Brengen or somewhere, I don't remember even where, I spoke so much for Lubavitch, that it's like Yaakov Avinu, like from Avinu, like, the most Yekna Shalovi came to him at a critical moment. And with me, if I have, let's say, I'm at a crossroad and I need to make a decision, right or left, what do I do? That I ask either I see the face of my mother or my father, and I know it comes to Ruchnius. I see the Rebbe's duty of Nishal Rebbe. I think history will place him as one of the great figures of the 20th century of Jewish history. Because what he has done to world Jewry, it wasn't only one place. He made Lubavitch into a capital. In every city of the world, Lubavitch moved to everywhere. He moved to Casablanca and moved to Nepal, and all of a sudden, the whole world became Lubavitch. To the pain of others who are also have also empires, Hasidic empires. But I find it good, and no doubt, his impact on Jewish education mainly That's the main impact on Jewish education.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Rabbi Alex Karlebach. And you were listening to a short audio clip by Elie Wiesel about the Rebbe. I'm a great admirer of Elie Wiesel, and you know his opinion of the Rebbe was very beautiful, wasn't it? Isn't it?
Amazing. Do you know that he was very, very impacted by the Rebbe? In fact, he told the Rebbe he didn't want to get married because he didn't want to bring children into the world after he experienced the Holocaust. Mm. He was literally a survivor of the camps, and he saw how much pain there was. And the Rebbe not only encouraged him to get married, but actually, like, very strongly encouraged him, and he said, you have to bring children into the world, otherwise you're letting Hitler, Yimach Shemoy, win. Mm. Mm. And I'm told that the biggest bouquet of flowers at his wedding was sent by the Rebbe.
Oh,
and thank God he has a son with the Rebbe's encouragement.
And the son is from today.
Yeah.
Also. Now, Rabbi, you know, we're going back to how the Rebbe sent people, students out all over the world. You told me a story about Nebraska.
Yeah.
Tell me that story.
Just before I do, you asked me about Melbourne.
Yes, let's go back to Melbourne.
Gimel Thomas, the third of Thomas, was the Rebbe's 32nd yahrzeit. 32nd in Hebrew is lave heart, and it's a very significant year. And out of the blue, I was invited by the Chabad community in Melbourne and in Sydney on a speaking engagement to speak for Gimel Thomas and to Fabreng there at that time. And there was an extra bonus that my daughter, son-in-law, and grandchildren lived there.
Ah.
So that was amazing. And amongst the things I said in my speech, which obviously telling about the Rebbe himself and the impact that he has had and that he continues to have, and how we are able, he set a mission with us, and that is to bring Mashiach now. And how do we fulfill that mission, and what are some of the things we should be doing and some of the things that perhaps we shouldn't be doing? So I told you this story that we, in those days, in the early 70s, there was not yet a shliach in every state of America, which today there is.
Just explain to our listeners what a shliach is.
An emissary, the Chabad rabbis in that place. And also, ever since the Rebbe came to America, he's been sending out two students for 3 weeks into different places of America in the summer, that they should spread Judaism. And there's so many stories one could tell about how they accomplished this. And we were sent 1 year to Lincoln, to Nebraska. We came to Lincoln, Nebraska, and we met their two brothers, real Yiddish-speaking, came from Der Heim, as they say, and they were extremely successful. They had blocks and blocks of car lots, used cars, new cars. And we were simple students, yet the respect they gave us and that they made sure their workers gave us was phenomenal. We were speaking, and towards the end of our talk, they said to us, do you know the Rashag? The Rashag is Rab Shmayahu Gerari, which was the Rebbe's older son-in-law. He was in charge of the Lubavitch yeshivas, and they needed extraordinary funds to run that yeshiva. And it seems like he used to go personally collecting around America in the 1950s, and maybe even the 60s, and he carried on getting funds from them. So they said, Shikim Agrus, send our regards to the Rashag. So the Rashag used to daven in 770 upstairs Shabbos afternoon mincha, and then he would recite a discourse at Shalosh Udus. So we went to him that mincha, right after mincha.
So to the headquarters of Lubavitch.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And we told him that we have regards from these two brothers in Lincoln, Nebraska. He looked at us, and his response in Yiddish was, Ich hoff nur, ihr hat gar nicht kalle gemacht, which means, I only hope you didn't ruin anything for me. And I often reflected on that story. This was the week I was there, the week of Shlach, where God sent the spies, sent the spies. And I realized what they actually did is Kalagemach. They really ruined it, not only for their generation, but we are suffering the whole Tisha B'Av. God said at that time, you're crying for nothing. I'll give you something to cry for. So we are still suffering with Vose Hom Kalagemacht. So if we're not going to do anything, at least let's not ruin anything. And that has so many different definitions.
Oh, it really does.
In our relationship with God and also in our relationship with human beings. Mm-hmm. We should try to always be polite, smiling, positive, and not to ruin anything. And we carry that responsibility even more as Jews.
And I think you're so right. You know, as you say, in the world we're living in today with the rise of anti-Semitism, I think we all have a mission. Mm. And our mission is to not get sucked into the hatred and the violence and negativity around us, but to realize that everyone is here for a reason at this 100%. Time of the world. You know, you told a story also, and I'm just trying to think what
the post box.
The post box, yes, that's right. And the key. Tell me about the post box.
Well, another story I told them is something I read in the Reader's Digest many years ago. I wonder how many people are old enough to remember the Reader's
well,
Digest.
Well, I do.
And one of the stories I read was actually quite sad. There was a bachelor living in New York in an apartment building. He had lost his job. He ran out of funds. He couldn't afford to sustain himself. He was finding it difficult to even buy food. He couldn't pay the rent. And he was really very depressed about the whole situation. And one day they put an eviction notice on his door that at a certain date, if his rent's not paid up, he'll be evicted. And being so depressed, sadly, he couldn't see any other way out, and he took his life. Mm. When they came to clear out the flat, you know, the mailbox keys, the mailboxes are down at the lobby, you mm-hmm. know, the ground floor. And he hadn't opened his mailbox in months because all there were bills. And they found the key, they opened up the mailbox, and amongst the envelopes was a letter from a barrister in London that some cousin of his had passed away and left him £1 million in his will, which meant that in fact he was not down and out, he was actually a millionaire. Mm. The problem is he never opened his post box to discover it. And so for all intents and purposes, it was like he never had it.
So and the moral of the story.
God Almighty has given each of us a part of himself, a godly soul. And he has sent us here, as you say, with missions, with purposes. And everything we go through is part of that all. He has also given us all the inner talents, all the capabilities, everything that we need, not only to live our life meaningful, but to contribute, mm-hmm. to do something good in this world, to do somebody a favor, to get closer, be it a physical, a spiritual one, as the Baal Shem Tov said, The Rebbe writes in the Yom Yom that a soul could come down here and live 70, 80 years with all the struggles, and the purpose is to do somebody a favor, be it a physical one, how much more so a spiritual one. Mm-hmm. And God has given that into our post box. It would be so sad if we never used the key to open it up and to bring out these gifts. Because if we did, we wouldn't ruin anything. We would fix it.
So true. And you know, Rabbi, you do a lot of work with people in life, at the end of their lives, and when you are burying family members. And you have a way about you of making everyone feel worthwhile and heard, and also talking about the person that they've lost with great feeling and sincerity. You know, I've been to many funerals where you sort of wonder, well, what's really being said, because you can't really tell. And there was something that you said to me that I think you said it was the Lubavitcher Rebbe who had said it, that someone had said to him, I knew your father. And he said, no, you didn't know my father. You saw my father.
Right.
So to me, that is what, when you are conducting, I don't know if that's the right word, a funeral service, you somehow, you see the people. You don't know many of them, but you see beyond what you don't know. What is that gift? What was your gift, and what did the Rebbe mean by that?
As you say, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe was told by an elderly chassid, I knew your father, referring to the fifth Rebbe. And he said, no, you didn't know him, you saw him. And in so many ways, that is true about each and every person. You know, there's a beautiful story that I often tell at Shiva houses, that the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, who lived in Lubavitch, it's actually a town, and that's why they're called Lubavitcher Rebbes. They lived there from 1815 to 1917, 102 years. And he had a chassid by the name of Reb Manya Monison, who was a diamond merchant. And when he came to visit the Rebbe asked him about a certain individual in his town who, paraphrasing, it was a simple schnook in Reb Manya's eyes. And the Rebbe asked so many questions about him. And then he moved on. So Reb Manya said, Rebbe, I don't understand. In my town, you have pious people, really holy people, yet you don't ask about any of them. Well, you ask about this guy. Why is he worthy of your attention? The Rebbe didn't answer, but at the end of the audience, he said, do you have your diamonds with you? He ran to his safe. He brought the diamonds. The Rebbe said, is there a diamond that's spectacular? He picked up one diamond. He said, you see how flawless it is, how clear. You see the color. This diamond must be worth five times more than any in my pouch. The Rebbe picked it up, impressed, but then he picked up others. They were shinier. They were bigger. He said, Reb Manya, I don't understand. These diamonds seem much nicer to me. If I were in the market for diamonds, I would buy these much more. So Reb Manya says, Irvet Miran Shuldikin, with all due respect, wenn se kommt zu Brillanten, when it comes to diamonds, you cannot distinguish them with a naked, unlearned eye. Mm. Diamonds take years of study. Und dennoch darf man sein ein Maven. And then you have to be an expert. And the Rebbe said to Reb Manya, Irvet Miran Shuldikin, with all due respect, when it comes to people, you cannot look at them with an untrained, naked eye and think you know what you're looking at. Mm. People take years of study. Und dennoch darf man sein am Maven. So the Rebbe was telling Reb Manya, you think this guy is a simple whatever. I have studied him, and I could tell you he's worthy of our attention. Every person is a diamond. Every person has something unique and special. It is by studying them, and usually it's only the family members who who know the challenges they go through, who know what their life is all about, and what a diamond they truly are. And that's how we have to look at everybody.
Isn't that beautiful? What a beautiful, beautiful story. On that note, we're going to pay for Chai FM to go keep on air.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and I'm back with Rabbi Alex Carlebach. And you were listening to Elie Wiesel talking about Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. And a short quote of his was, "Let the good in me connect with the good in others until all the world is transformed through the compelling power of love." And on that note, I'd like to get back to Rabbi Carlebach's gift at funerals. Rabbi, what is this gift you have? Because it is a gift.
Thank you. Every person has positives and negatives. And it certainly depends on what you focus on. So I try and hear from the families.
Because many of them are strangers to you.
Yes, but thank God they say some things, and you're able to focus on the positives.
And you're able to draw it out of them.
Thank you. And you see that, number one. And so to bring out the positives of every individual, trying to individualize it, number one. And in addition, to keep pointing out that a human being is so much more than what we see with our physical eyes. All we see is a body. What we don't see is the gift of the Almighty in each and every one of us, the soul, which is eternal. And the soul carries on after passing. And not only that, but the connection remains so strong. And it's a two-way connection, whereas the souls of our loved ones remain connected to us, concerned for us, and they pray to God on our behalf. And another cliche I often use is that one of the differences between this world and the next world is that in the next world they don't accept checks anymore, only receipts for what you've done here.
Yeah.
So there are people who go up with many receipts. The Talmud says even the worst of us are full of good deeds like a pomegranate is full of seeds.
Lovely thought.
And to promote the positivity. But when the family, the loved ones, those who are still here, do mitzvot as a result of their influence,
so
that
doing
they had,
good deeds.
They emulate their good deeds. These become not only a source of comfort and consolation to themselves, but also a source of growth to the soul up in heaven, because it is that soul that they are doing the good deed as a result. And again, it could be any good deed. It could be putting on tefillin every day, which you don't need a minion for. Kaddishin or minyan. Tefillin you could do on your own. For a lady, whatever mitzvah. And every time they do something, kindness for somebody else, they're elevating the soul. To me, I have the biggest sympathy for those who think that a human being is just a body. And once they passed away, they're gone. I don't know how they cope. And it's against all reason. We all sense that there's more to a human than just the body.
I have to agree with you. I could not have done the work that I have done in my own life if I thought that it was just that the body was the end. Thank goodness from a very, very young age I knew that the body was so much greater, that there was something wonderful within each body. Now, you know, there were many stories told about you, but the one story was that you mentioned to me was something about Lebola, and it was something about, tell me about that. Do you remember that? It was we're just going to a quick break.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I'm back with Rabbi Alex Karlebach, and the time is going very quickly. Rabbi, I wanted you to tell me about a blessing that you gave to a king.
That's a beautiful story. I had the privilege of meeting many wonderful people when we started our shul and through the ages of our shul. And one of them was David Nepi Oliver Scholl, who is an amazing man. He was also the last white mayor of Johannesburg.
That's right, yeah.
His father, Max Nepi, was also the mayor at one time.
Oh.
And he was able to appoint a chaplain. So I became the chaplain of the mayor of Johannesburg, and I did attend certain functions. One of the functions that I attended was he had a beautiful dinner for King Goodwill Zwelithini of the Zulus. And at that time, the Rebbe had come out and promoted us to teach about the seven laws of Noach to get the whole world united in keeping these seven laws, which we'll go into some other time, and in being better people. And there's also a law that when you see a king of flesh and blood, there's a special blessing that we say, blessed is God who has given this king of his royalty and all. So I spoke to different rabbis. We know that you could say the blessing over the Queen of England. I wanted to know if you could say it over the King of the Zulus.
Yeah.
And they answered, the King of the Zulus has a lot more practical power than the Queen of England. So you can certainly say it. So I told this to David, and I suggested that we do it for good King Goodwill Zwelithini, and he loved the idea. Now, when Goodwill Zwelithini entered the hall, he had all kinds of praise singers and people bowing down to him. It was quite fascinating. And I gave the introductory speech. I spoke about the seven laws of Noah. And then I said, there is a special blessing that we say for a king. And I recited the words in Hebrew and in English. Then during the dinner, King Goodwill Zwelithini approached me with, he had like a shtecken in his hand.
Well, what's that?
A stick.
Oh, right.
And he said to me, Rabbi.
A nobkiri, we call them here, yeah.
He said, Rabbi, I want you to know, I have received many blessings in my life, but this is the first time I received it in the original language of the Bible in Hebrew. Mm. So I am very grateful to you for it. He was a very educated man, well-spoken. I think he studied in Oxford. But
Isn't that wonderful? And did his followers who were there, did they say anything? They must have also been quite amazed by it.
I didn't get any other reactions except from David saying, Yashukaya. Huh. I'd like to say one more line, if I may. It's not words that count. It's definitions that count. And I was telling you that I heard from a David Sachs. He was in Japan for Shabbos. And with his mazel, the lowest floor they could give him was on the 70th floor.
Oh, what luck.
And there was no Shabbos elevators in
and
Japan.
And he kept Shabbos.
And he kept Shabbos. So Shabbos afternoon, he's huffing and puffing and walking up these stairs.
70 floors.
70 floors. On the 63rd floor, he's out of... And a Japanese worker walks out onto the stairway and sees him like this and gives him a puzzled look. And David says, no. Today is my day of rest. Now, how would you define that to a person who doesn't keep Shabbos and doesn't know what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
And so there are so many things in life. There's so many things in Torah that we have to appreciate. they're not the words used. They are the definitions behind them. Mm-hmm. And it is by opening it up, doing a little study. And today, the world is open. On YouTubes, on podcasts, you could get so much authentic Torah. It's spoken in your own language, mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. that interest you, and in a negative way. Whenever I have trouble falling asleep, I put on a shir, and within 10 minutes,
I'm asleep.
But
now my mind goes opposite. It starts going around what people say.
Well, maybe it's racing, and this way it focuses. But the fact is, I encourage everyone to study, to find out the definitions of God. We don't know the definition of God. You know, a friend of mine was on a college campus. Someone told him, "I don't believe in God." He wanted to shock him. And he said, "I don't blame you. The God you do not believe in is not the God I do believe in. If I had your definition of God, I wouldn't believe in him either." So it's not
good
words.
Answer.
It's not the word soul, the word God, the word Mashiach. These all have true Torah authentic sources. And it's our responsibility and to give to our children the definitions of what they're all about.
I was thinking, our children are sponges, our grandchildren are little sponges waiting to hear how to bring good into this world. And, you know, on that note, I would like to just talk about something that Rebbe Schneerson said about Tikkun Olam, which is to repair the world. If you see what needs to be repaired and how to repair it, then you have found a piece of the world that God has left for you to complete. But if you only see what is wrong and what is ugly in the world, then it is you yourself that needs repair. So may we all see the good in one another and in the world. Thank you, Rabbi Carlebach. I'm being told to wrap up. Thank you for being here. There's so much more to talk about. We will do it another time. God Thank God. You, Craig. Thank you, Vusi. And thank you, Mukundi.